Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up, America? It is a Friday on the Doug Gottlieb Show. John Ramos is hanging out as well. It is also a special day as we celebrate 50 years and now a day of life for our anchor, Ralph Ervin. Welcome in, everyone. It is great to have you with us as there is now less than 60 minutes away from baseball's trade deadline. I mentioned Ralph's name. He will keep you updated on everything that is going on in Major League Baseball. 58 minutes, 45 seconds and counting until that deadline. But we start, Mike, with the trades that did and didn't happen last night in the NBA. Now, they can't become official until August 6th, but the biggest trade of the night and one of the bigger trades that we've seen in the NBA when you have these crazy off seasons was Russell Westbrook going from the Washington Wizards to the Lakers for a package that includes Kyle Kuzma, Montrezl Harrell, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and a pick from last night's draft. Other picks involved as well. But, Mike, this was a big trade, and I'm not trying to just sell it because it's the show. It's a big trade because it's the Lakers, but it's also a big trade because it's Russell Westbrook for a guy that I don't know if there's a guy in the NBA that we have really been all over the map on when we talk about how we rate this guy, how we analyze this guy. And he truly is one of the superstars. And I would say that stat stuffer sometimes now comes into the equation when it comes to Russell Wilson. It's one of the monikers that we have about him. And now he goes to LA and trying to win a championship. So you take all those forces together, and it's why it's a magnificent trade happening in the NBA. But I would say overall, the sense that I got was a negative reaction on the Lakers' sides of things. When you heard Russell Westbrook was going to the Lakers, what popped into your mind last night?
I celebrated it for a couple of reasons. Number one, he's one of my favorite players just to watch. You know, and people can get into what maybe there's a minute here and there in games that they get upset or the tip to the, you know, opportunity to get the triple-double because he needs that 10th board. Whatever the case may be, I get it. There's some hand-wringing that goes to it. And when we get into the playoffs, well, that's a whole other discussion. And we can do that with pretty much, 98% of the NBA? There's regular season guy and then there's the few, and that's why they separate themselves to become all-time greats. But from a work side, right, for what we do and living in Los Angeles and broadcasting from here, this is great theater. Are you kidding me? I just started fist-pumping like I was the biggest Lakers fan in the world. Because now it's one of two things, and you had the tweet to encapsulate it all, so I'll just lead up to that. But just the idea that if it succeeds, it's going to get everybody in their feels about LeBron and teaming up and whatever else. And then if it doesn't, well, then those that are, well, they're hate watching, right? Because we talk about the importance of hate watching in sports. Maybe I do that more than others. We appreciate what's going on the court, on the diamond, on the gridiron, whatever. But whenever there's a team that you really don't like for one reason or another, in this case, the Lakers, because it just seems that other than that six-year block, they're in the finals or fighting for a finals appearance every year, that, you know, they're that team that you shake your fist and you're mad about, you know, because they got richer. And now it's just a matter of how do you round off the rest of the roster. I mean, it's great theater either way. If it's good, great. If it's bad, it's the other. And for you, I think you had the tweet of the night that I would like put on a plaque.
Well, in full disclosure, I said this to Doug at the end of yesterday's show, and I figured I should put it in tweet form. But the ones that benefit the most from Russell Westbrook are LeBron and AD, because Laker fans then can blame Westbrook for all of the Laker misfortunes that may happen next season, and that is what is going to happen. But one of the things that I have learned, and I don't necessarily disagree with anything that you said there, but one of the things that I've learned in trying to analyze on who's a better team, who wins this game. It's how does the other team feel about it? We talk about it on fourth down like in NFL games. If it's fourth and two on the opponent's 43-yard line, what does the other team want you to do? If they want you to punt, then maybe you should go for it. And if they want you to go for it, then maybe you should punt. That's how we look at it. And I look at it as, how does the rest of the Western Conference look at that Lakers deal? And I don't know, Mike, if any team is saying, ah, darn it, they got Russell Westbrook. I really don't. And it's not that the Lakers aren't giving up a lot in terms of what will be missing from their team. It's just the fact of they gave up so much that I don't know what else they can do as well. And that's where I it leads me to this. And I think of the Lakers and I say, this NBA that they think now exists doesn't. And I've really turned on the big three in that sort of window that we've had in the NBA. You got to have a big three. Who's Milwaukee's big three? Who's Phoenix's big three now? Does Utah have a big three? Brooklyn's got a big three. Who's the big three? If you could get eight guys who can contribute and have a, you can have a hierarchy. You can have a one, you can have a 1A and a 1B, but you need seven or eight guys to do so in the NBA. And I would argue that when you look at the last couple of champions that we've had, when it came to the Raptors and when it came to the Bucks, taking the bubble out of consideration, but even take the Suns getting to the finals this past year, yeah, Kawhi was the best player on the Raptors and got them over the edge, but they also had guys down through 6, 7, and 8. You had Norman Powell coming off the bench for that team. There were other guys that contributed with the Bucks as well, so you know, Dante DiVincenzo goes out, Pat Connaughton starts getting more minutes, Bobby Portis became a guy. You need that sort of stuff. And that's where I just wonder with the Lakers. And I think that Rob Pelinka and the Lakers just kind of take the easy way out. To me, it wasn't the deal yesterday. It wasn't as much about Russell Westbrook as it was about whether he's going to work or not, as it was about Rob Pelinka and the Lakers just thinking, well, let's just throw a bunch of guys in and bring in one guy, and then people can't say we didn't do our job. And I don't know if that recipe works anymore in the NBA, and I don't think it works, and I just don't think that it's going to work for the Lakers, even if Russell Westbrook turns out better than we could have expected.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of things, and look, I don't want to belabor what the last year was, right? And it's certainly not going down that hole. The injuries! But it was a strange year. I think we can all stipulate to that. And the Bucks depth, you bring up DiVincenzo. He was one of the reasons I didn't pick him to go far, and shame on me. But you also
you're the only one. Don't worry.
And by the way, with the big three though, three's a magic number. We learned that from Schoolhouse Rock 40 years ago. It has not changed. It has been remade and repackaged in so many different genres because it's true. 3, 6, 9. You know. But anyway, I figured you'd start singing along with me.
Oh, I just know 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. That's
Little Electric Company. Yeah, I could dig that.
That's all I could remember from that.
No, that was good, too, because you were just picturing the pinball machine as you did that, too. But you mentioned all the guys that get traded away in this package. Obviously, the NBA rules on finding salary matches and all that kind of fun stuff. I'm mad because KCP was the architect of all this. And even though he's still clutch sports, I mean, they did him wrong and sent him out of town. But when we look at it, these were all guys they were trying to get rid of in some fashion anyway. So they all get packaged. Doesn't leave you with many guys signed, right? We talk about Schroeder having to be a sign-and-trade kind of situation. Talen Horton-Tucker, what is he? What's that contract look like as he goes? Or is he a guy that is coveted enough on other teams that you find a deal with him? Or are you going to find a bunch of veteran guys? I mean, immediately, and it wasn't just because Jason Smith was talking with me to speak it into existence, but how many times did you see the name Carmelo Anthony come up to where it started like, all right, here's the veterans that want to try to fight for a ring, and having a year in a Laker uniform would be a big deal. So that's part of it as well. But, yeah, for Rob Pelinka, went big game hunting here. And I really do think, and as we talked about since their ouster in the playoffs, like you just didn't have a lot of assets on the books to really even make deals with. right? Because we had the reports a week ago that they basically offered Kyle Kuzma to everybody. Mm-hmm. It's not that he's not a guy that serves a function, but he certainly has not become the every game player that everybody would have anticipated because they gave him his shot, right? He was the golden child for Jeannie Buss and company. Everybody else got shipped off early.
Sure.
He was the last man standing, and now he's gone.
Do you think that LeBron played a role in any of this? Because there were the Buddy Hield talks, and we're in a week where Aaron Rodgers wants more input, and I just wonder if that was beneficial for the Lakers. I mean, if LeBron, I'm not trying to pin it on LeBron, but if LeBron is saying like, yeah, go out and get Russell Westbrook, there's a guy giving his input. But again, it's the Pelinka deals are we'll trade everybody for Anthony Davis. We'll trade everybody else for Russell Westbrook. And then the ones that that when he tried to piece something together, and maybe that's what burned him, were the signings of Montrezl Harrell and Dennis Schroeder this past offseason. Maybe that is why they ended up turning back to it. But to me, it just seems that it's looked at as almost like, I don't want to say the easy way out, because I don't think they're out. Like the Lakers are going to compete because of the guys that they have, but the injuries that you point to, you talk about another now full season, mm-hmm. even with a shortened off season for these guys, there's no guarantee that AD, LeBron, or Russell Westbrook are going to make it through the season unscathed and be healthy for the playoffs. And you're just putting a lot of your eggs in one basket. I don't necessarily get it when it comes to the Lakers sort of things. Like the Buddy Hield thing is like, okay, we filled the need. We got a 3-point shooter. But what does Russell Westbrook do? And now what else do you have? Now you're just bringing in random pieces to fill out your roster. And that's just the difficult part that I have about it. I just think the Lakers front offices are making easy moves when they actually have a brand that people would want to go to. And maybe they could be more deliberate in figuring out who they want to bring into town.
Yeah, I mean, they made a couple of signings, undrafted players, and you start wondering how they fit into any kind of long-term plans. The three-point shooting piece is certainly something that needs to be addressed as we talk about what Russell's 30% guy for his career, right? 30.5. So that's certainly not in his game. And he's shown a willingness to kind of push that off, right, and eschew those shots before. I think it just goes back to, again, for the regular season, for the load management game / actual injuries that come in for LeBron and Anthony Davis, you've now got another guy that you don't have to worry about, oh, wow, I sat down for 3 minutes and our 12-point lead evaporated, right? Westbrook could still take care of that stuff. But to that point, you don't have depth. And you mentioned Milwaukee. Bobby Portis playing out of his mind. Can't wait to see what kind of deal he gets next. Not that the Bulls couldn't have used him in that format a couple years ago. Chicago bias coming in. And the Raptors before that, you know, adding Kawhi and whatever you think of Kawhi, he just goes to work. Now, injuries and disagreements with training staffs aside, when he's on the court, you know what you get. So it's a little bit of a different NBA. But what rules in Hollywood, Dan Byer? Star power. Welcome home, Russell Westbrook. Welcome home.
It gives Rob Pelinka just the opportunity to be like, hey, look, I made this deal if things don't go wrong. And he's saying, hey, it's the easiest thing to do. It's easy to just do that and to have guys throw a bunch of pieces together and bring those superstars in. I think that they took the easy way out again. He's Mike Harmon. I'm Dan Byer. This is the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. You can reach both of us on Twitter. You can get Mike at Swollen Dome. You can find me on Twitter at Dan Byer on Fox. While the Lakers were taking a big swing, another NBA contender in the West stood with the bat on their shoulder. We'll tell you who that was next year on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Baseball's trade deadline is passed, but a lot of names on the move. Javi Baez to New York, Chris Bryant to San Francisco. A lot going on there. Ralph Ervin will keep you updated, especially if there are any deals that were done before the deadline but only reported afterwards. We will have that. We will also tell you in an hour from now We will talk about the NBA draft and what may need to change with it. In 20 minutes, we'll break down the draft from last night and also what the Lakers did with Russell Westbrook and what the Warriors didn't do, all that and so much more, including Ben Simmons talk. That's in 20 minutes. But we're going to start because this Carson Wentz story just isn't going away, Mike, and it's about the foot injury that he suffered in practice yesterday. There were various news reports on what Wentz's status was, but the general consensus from what we heard from numerous insiders, whether it be Ian Rappaport or Mike Garafolo of the NFL Network, was that Carson Wentz suffered a foot injury in practice yesterday. The hope was that the team would avoid surgery, that he could heal this injury and maybe be ready for week one of the NFL season. But now Mike Silver of the NFL Network is going a little bit more in depth on what he knows about this story. And Silver said, and this is a quote from Mike Silver of the NFL Network, "I'm told the Wentz foot injury involves a bone and a ligament. Colts had been hoping for better news, are bracing for possible surgery. Also told that Wentz felt a pop at practice on Thursday." Now, I am not going to shy away from it. I've not made my official Super Bowl 56 pick yet. But, Mike, the Indianapolis Colts, to me, were a team that I had right in the running for representing the AFC. Even as just the seventh seed last year, I actually felt that Carson Wentz would be an upgrade to Phillip Rivers this offseason. I think it was a young team. I love what they have on their offensive line. I love what they have on their defensive line. I think they're one of the better defensive teams that you've got in the National Football League. And if you just had Carson Wentz play to somewhat near when he was playing well with the Philadelphia Eagles, I thought that they were a legitimate threat. Now the first part of the season may come down to the shoulders of one Jacob Eason if Carson Wentz can't go. Call me foolish, but I think that this is a big, big blow to the Colts' chances at a possible Super Bowl.
Oh, there's some huge, huge ramifications here as to Cooks. Look, I'm already knee-deep in fantasy football research, you know, with I Want Your Flex Season 2 coming back and getting myself all pretty to make all sorts of videos and prognostications. A lot of talk about Jonathan Taylor and what he meant. But you also have Ryan Kelly's out with a hyperextended elbow, so he's going to miss at least 2-3 weeks. Frank Reich tested positive for COVID. Darius Leonard's not practicing. And now you've got this news. So immediately, friends, family are like, so Nick Foles, they've got their suitor. Insert all Carson Wentz, Nick Foles jokes here. But legitimately, you've got Eason, as we know, Washington and Georgia, and a guy that some were pretty excited when he showed up, right, and wondering if he'd get a shot. Jacoby Brissett is not there for you this year. So it's the Carson Wentz. That's why I couldn't have picked him. Dan was not expecting a foot injury, but just I wasn't expecting the quick rebound, no matter how much the reconnection with Frank Reich might have been a positive. I love that offensive line. Some of the young receivers just had a lot of questions on Wentz. Wish him well and hope this ends up becoming something that can be quickly remedied. But start to see all the, as soon as you start seeing the names of the doctors that he's about to go see, that's when you know you're in trouble. Well, he's going to go see Dr. Robert Anderson. It's like Frank Job and some of those other guys. As soon as their name
Dr. James Andrews.
James Andrews, yeah. Right? You start wringing your hands going, oh, if he's going to that guy already.
It's good to see Dr. Neil Elatrosh in Los Angeles. That's another doctor. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, this is why I liked the Colts. And when you look defensively, top 10 in points allowed last year, top 8 in yards allowed. So they are up there with the teams that you would also expect is your better defensive teams. I don't think that we looked at the Colts and thought of them as a defensive juggernaut. You mentioned Jonathan Taylor and what he did at the end of the season. You also have another year of now Michael Pittman Jr. is going to be entering his second season. T.Y. Hilton may be going for a last hurrah. You mentioned the injury to Ryan Kelly, but the offensive line is arguably the best in football, if not one of the best, if not
just
the
put
best.
Them on the Mount Rushmore. Yeah. And it's July still. We haven't done any Mount Rushmore
Cleveland
talk because there's been too much sports.
Cleveland's got a good offensive line, but the Colts are there. They are in the discussion. Mm-hmm. So everything was there. And then when you saw what they did with their playoff game in Buffalo against the Bills. And that was enough to tell me that this team, even though they got the seventh seed last year in the AFC, they're one of the top teams. I had more belief in Carson Wentz than maybe you did. But even taking Carson Wentz out of the equation, the toughest part about this, Mike, is how good the AFC is right now.
Right. The South itself is a two-team race, at least on paper, right? It's
sure.
Tennessee, it's Indianapolis, and then you've got a giant question mark over whatever the hell's going on in Jacksonville. Houston, we just assume if they win four games, it's a victory.
Yeah, those two teams, maybe you're not expecting a lot from. But I would argue that if you went around in the other three divisions, maybe Cincinnati's still not there in the AFC North. And I don't think a lot of people think Pittsburgh is going to be able to do what they did early on and last season and carry that over as they were the last unbeaten team. I think people believe that Pittsburgh's going to take a step back. But, Mike, they're still Pittsburgh. They're still the Steelers. They still have T.J. Watt. We think they have a healthy Ben Roethlisberger. They've changed their offensive line. They've added Najee Harris in the draft. So there are changes there. So while I may not be as high on Pittsburgh, and I'm not sure your thoughts on the Steelers, the point is they're still in the conversation, just like Cleveland is, just like Baltimore is. So that's three teams from the AFC North that you have. You go to the AFC East, we know about Buffalo. I know the Jets are a long way off, but then you have the Dolphins who were knocking on the door last year, and then you have New England, who we expect to be better after what was last season. How much better? Who knows? But again, they are in the conversation.
But they were 7-9 with everything that went wrong.
Yeah.
Right? Cam got COVID. Almost half your defensive starters sat out because of COVID. And you really didn't have anybody step up in terms of skill position players. You're a year removed from that. And Cam's been there a year now, right? He had signed, the end of June when he finally came to work and was looking to get involved there. So, yeah, I expect better things from them. Miami, roster-wise, is top to bottom. You know, you could still questions about Tua, but otherwise, I feel like they've got about as strong a roster top to bottom as anybody.
Yeah, and in those three divisions, we've named eight teams, and only seven make the playoffs. And we haven't even talked about the team that's been in the Super Bowl the last 2 years or the other teams in their division where we expect the Chargers to be better. We expect Denver to be better. I don't know what we're going to get from the Raiders, but we know Kansas City's going to be there. And that was the funny thing about the Rodgers thing, Mike, was when he shows up to training camp, Green Bay is already in contention. But really, when you look in the NFC, I really think that there are about five teams that you think could win the Super Bowl or go to the Super Bowl, I should say. Green Bay would be one of them with Rodgers, Tampa Bay, and then I'd put the three teams in the NFC West with the Rams, Niners, and Seahawks in that equation. I'm not sold on New Orleans. I like Washington in the NFC East, but I'm just not sold on anybody in that division that could make a push. In the AFC, and that's what makes this so tricky for the Colts, and maybe, who knows, maybe it's a blessing in disguise. Maybe Jacob Eason becomes the guy in Indianapolis and takes the reins and never looks back. Who knows? But the margin of error is so slim now in that conference, even with seven playoff teams, that if you aren't ready to go and they're right away, and the Colts, I know they start off with Seattle, and I believe they have the Rams week two. If you don't have your quarterback set and you have those two games, granted they're not AFC opponents, but they are two of the better teams in the NFL, it just is a major setback when I look at the Colts and what could be there this season.
Go ahead, Dan.
No, I was just going to say, I like Wentz more than you do, but even with him just not being there, it's going to be tough to make up with all those other good teams.
Well, and look, if he's going to miss 6 weeks, like, they've got to be on the phone trying to find a veteran now. And I joke about Foles, but he's number three, right? QB1, as we've been told in social media, is Andy Dalton until Justin Fields is ready. Nick Foles is getting paid a nice wage to wear a baseball cap and be the emergency guy behind the glass right now. You look at the Colts schedule, as you mentioned, Seattle and Los Angeles at home to start the year. And then weeks 3, 4, and 5 at Tennessee, at Miami, at Baltimore.
Oh, my goodness.
So right out of the gate. And what's the continuity of those teams as well? They're all teams that will beat the hell out of your quarterback if he's not decisive with the football. They're all attacking defenses. So
yeah,
with big sack potential all over the place. So, yeah, Jacob Eason, welcome to your NFL moment. I don't know that that's how you want to go into the year. And we have no idea what he is, right? It's like anybody that immediately tries to dismiss that Jordan Love will never amount to anything but a bag of balls. You have no idea. The only thing we're measuring him against is the fact that you have Aaron Rodgers. So when we're talking about Jacob Eason, you had the opportunity, familiarity, lower price, all of that to bring in Carson Wentz, and now you have this. So a tough blow to start camp for sure.
Yeah, I think it's a bigger deal than just of – because the reports that we had heard was Carson Wentz, foot injury, out indefinitely, hoping the 6 weeks between now and the start of the regular season is enough time for him to heal. But now when you hear Mike Silver saying that there's a pop, that there's a bone and ligament that could possibly be involved in all this, and if you're going to miss the entire training camp and now he's going to be joining a new team, your margin of error, again, in the AFC is so, so slim because of how many good teams there are. And when you lay out that schedule, you're going to just throw Carson Wentz into the fire if he hasn't been – practicing with the team into that time. If Jacob Eason's the guy getting all your reps, yeah, maybe he's the guy to start the season and you give Wentz a little bit more time. Either way, you're going through quite a murderer's row to start the season. And even if you were to drop the first two games against Seattle and the Rams, two of the better teams in the NFC, you laid out what they have there in the AFC in front of them. There's division implications with the Titans. There's wild card implications with the Ravens, with the Dolphins. All at play makes the Carson Wentz injury much, much bigger deal than maybe what it appears on the surface. He's Mike Harmon. I'm Dan Beyer. This is the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Get Mike on Twitter at Swollen Dome. You can find me on Twitter at Dan Beyer on Fox. Speaking of deals, the Knicks were wheeling and dealing last night. Will it pay off in the Big Apple? We'll talk about that next year on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hope your Friday is going well. The weekend is almost here, but we'd love it if you hung with us for a little while longer. Ben Verlander going to talk some Major League Baseball and trade deadline coming up within the next 20 to 30 minutes or so. Mike Harmon is murdering the Chicago Cubs on Twitter. You can find him at Swollen Dome. As a Southsider, Mike, how nice is this day for you as the Cubs are getting rid of everyone? And even some of those bodies are just heading to the south side of town.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously you get Kimbrel to come over to the south side. Madrigal's a guy that you like, doesn't really have a role now in for the Sox, so he gets shipped out for the Cub fans, and I know folks that work there. Old buddy Cole Wright been going back and forth with him because he's done some fantastic, what I guess you would call exit interviews, one that went viral with Anthony Rizzo yesterday as he was the first of the players to be jettisoned from the Cubs roster. It's just that all that promise, all of the expectations, you know, whenever we start throwing, wow, it looks like this could be a dynastic run. Always to remember that usually doesn't happen, no matter how all the stars aligned for that short period, right? Because with the Cubs, it was everything. There was a little bit of money spent, but a lot of guys that came up through the organization, which meant the scouting department was point and dead solid perfect for a couple of years. For Rizzo, he'd gone through so much from his beginnings to come to Chicago and become one of those guys, the face of a franchise. You go all the way through that you only got one title out of it. Now, it ended the run, and it kind of killed some of that mystique of the lovable losers, but now it's gone. All of those guys have, been Thanos'd away. snap of the finger and they're all gone. It's like everybody on the Nationals roster, but that's another time.
Yeah.
As a wistful Dave Martinez looks around going, I don't know who any of these people are. But in Chicago, I know it's tough. I got a lot of friends that are texting me, you know, with stuff I can't say on air, just upset that they threw up the flag, and no, not the one with the W that they do after every home win. No, this is a big deal. Yeah, it's a giant L for the squad, because you got your one and now you realize where you are, and finances, the Ricketts are a whole other story. We could do a podcast series on them another time, but all those guys that have been the faces of your franchise and this renaissance are all gone.
Your point about the Cubs thinking that this was going to be a long run, I mean, especially in this day and age, you know, when you're competing against teams like the Dodgers who just buy championships, it's tough to do. I purposely did that for John Ramos. That was just a perfect. I don't even mean it, and I was just kidding. See, that's John's laugh of like, all right. I really don't think it was that funny, but I am going to play along because it's a radio show. I really didn't appreciate. Just kidding, John. Just kidding. But Mike, if you would have told Cub fans 10 years ago of this scenario, they would have had to have taken it.
Sure. No, that's the thing, right? Yeah. And for anybody that criticizes how the Marlins have done their business, whatever, give me those World Series titles. I'll take the misery that goes along with it. Hell, I'm a Sox fan. I got 2005. I got a lot of nice prospects. I got to watch a lot of Frank Thomas live and in living color, you know, our colleague at Fox, and a number of big plays and Mark Burley and all that. I got one title. It's over those now hated Astros, so you know we have a kindred thing, right?
League rival,
right?
Now.
Right, Johnny? Yeah, exactly. But yeah, for Cub fans, yeah, if you'd said we're going to be competitive and we're actually going to get one, even with the Bartman thing thrown in before that, that you were able to turn it around and have this run, I think you have to take it. And for those just wondering, if you're not on Twitter over at Swollen Dome, I tweeted the old line that folks throw up. And this might make you throw up. Don't be sad it's over. Be glad it happened. Okay, I tried, Cubs fans. And then there was a great gif of all the relievers dancing in the bullpen.
Now knowing what I know now, I really wish they would have blown Game 7 in Cleveland in 2016. Because could you imagine how long this curse would have been going on if they would have ended up losing that game, the Tribe would have gotten one more run and the in the eighth and ninth innings, and yeah, wouldn't have needed to go to extras. But as you said, Cubs are broken up, and maybe the Cub fans are broken up about it. Jumping back to the NBA draft, you gave it a B+. I gave it a B. I gave it a B for the simple fact of this, Mike, is I like that there were three or four picks of guys that we think could be, I don't want to say franchise changers. I think Cade Cunningham is. I actually think that Evan Mobley could be quite the pick for the Cleveland Cavaliers. But there were three or four guys that we really liked in this draft, and we recognized their names, and we feel that they could make an impact in the NBA. Now, for the last 20 to maybe 25 years, we've had this same argument. What's wrong with the NBA draft? Why isn't it like it used to be? And so I'm one of those guys, Mike, and I decided I remember the drafts of 1992, 1993, 1994, just some great drafts that I can remember in my youth. And I remember being excited about those drafts for a variety of reasons.
Jim Jackson in 92,
yeah,
so yeah.
Fourth overall to the Mavericks after Shaq, Alonzo Mourning, and Christian Laettner. By the way, that was my answering machine message for a while when I was growing up, was the Jim Jackson announcement, David Stern announcing that he was going to the Dallas Mavericks. When you would call my house, you would hear that announcement. But I loved the NBA draft. Obviously, I was a big Jim Jackson fan. And I have great memories of it. And now when you look at this NBA draft, Mike, I think we've tried to figure out what's wrong with the NBA draft over the last 20 years. And we point to a couple of things. The college game changing with the one and done has been a big part. I've also heard we don't know the guys who are coming over from Europe. We don't know those talents that have played in Spain or France. We're not familiar with those players that are coming from overseas, so therefore that we can't get excited about it. And I I understand those arguments. I just don't believe those arguments. I'm just going to put the blame solely on the NBA. And the NBA itself, I'm not blaming college basketball. I'm not blaming I'm not blaming the one and dones. I'm not going to say that we don't know the players because they're coming from different countries. I think all that's garbage. Like, we love Luka Doncic. Now, we love Giannis Antetokounmpo. Granted, we don't know a lot about him. It's not the reason why. It's the same reason why the NBA is where it is. The only thing we care about is stars, and the only thing that we really care about are the top couple of teams in each league. And that's where I think, like, last night was such a perfect microcosm of what's wrong. The biggest story on what is supposed to be one of the biggest nights of the season for the NBA was nothing about the players coming to the league. It was about a player that some people may think is washed up or can't help a team win, and that is Russell Westbrook. The star players and then what it means for LeBron was the real dominating headlines. And I just think that the way that the NBA is, the way that it's consumed, doesn't allow us to like the draft like we used to 20, 25 years ago.
No, I think there's a lot to unpack to it. And I think, you know, as you and I have talked in these spots before, Dan, I think the name, image, and likeness thing, you know, for folks that don't like the one and dones, well, that's going to change because a lot of guys are going to realize I can stay. That doesn't mean you're not still going to have a number of guys at the top of the draft that do that route or take one of these G League deals or whatever. But we saw how many guys withdrew from this year's draft, realizing, hey, if I ain't guaranteed a slot in that first round, I'm going to go make money in college and keep my eligibility and do that for another year. So I think the college game and our NCAA tournament loving will give us a little bit of love there. I have always wondered why there haven't been pre-draft specials, because we get like 900,000 of them for football. Why those sure. aren't well publicized, where we, you know, have the sit downs, you know, even
you
Tom
why.
Rinaldi kind of violin playing in the background to get us excited.
I'll give you the answer why. Because the draft is 8 days after the NBA Finals ends, and so the broadcast partner who has it would be ESPN is so NBA Finals crazed that they don't even take the week to lead up to it to promote it. Like the
but
time,
they, but they appropriately allocate their. Never mind.
the era that I'm talking about, that where we look back at the NBA draft, and maybe it's because we're similar age, Mike. But I think those drafts in the early to mid 90s were magnificent. I mean, in 94, you had Glenn Robinson, Jason Kidd, and Grant Hill go 1-2-3. I mentioned in 92, you had Shaq, Alonzo Mourning, Christian Laettner go 1-2-3. And then you would go maybe a little further down in the lottery, and there'd be some other names. And I look last night, you had Cade Cunningham, you had Evan Mobley. I'll put Jalen Green, although I don't think there was as much hype about Jalen Green because of the G League. You had Jalen Suggs, who was just coming off of a magnificent NCAA tournament. So there were four names there that you could really get excited about, but that's not how we consume the NBA anymore, because the NBA is just all about proven stars, and it's all about the top teams. And even in the 1990s, when the Bulls were dominating, we were still interested in those other places. Maybe teams back then had less of a chance to win a title because of who the Bulls were than, you know, who's winning titles now, whether it be the Bucks or the Raptors. It's just the point of it's become such a superstar driven league, and it's we don't care about the teams anymore. We don't even know the divisions anymore, because all we care about is conference seeding, if it even comes to that. It's just we consume it differently. So it has nothing to do with the one and dones. Well, maybe a little. It maybe has a little to do with not understanding the players who come over from a different country, or maybe play in the G League Unite. But it's really, I think, on how we consume the NBA and how we look at the NBA, where Russell Westbrook's trade to the Lakers last night completely overshadowed the entire night. That's the problem with the NBA draft.
Well, yeah, I think it's the NBA, and a point you made there, Dan, of we come into training camps and exhibition games in those first months of the season. I mean, how many years now can you remember the joke of they shouldn't play till Christmas? Right.
Yeah.
So if the schedule has to be moved, yeah, this is perfect, right? People liked it going to 72 games or less. Look, man, everybody wants to get paid and get their bag. It's going back to 82. You're going to have to like it. Okay, and the players are going to have to deal with that as well. A load management or whatever mechanism has to happen. But we know from day one, What we could take the whiteboard in our Fox Sports Radio studios and write down, what, six teams? And that's most years in the last decade being generous to get to six, right? Normally, it was, I mean, for several years, it was just Warriors, Cavs. Okay, you got to give me someone who they're going to play in the conference finals. Go. Right? I mean, that's where we got with our NBA coverage. And it didn't mean that in the individual markets, you didn't love it. And on the national television side, you didn't sit and watch and marvel at some of these guys. But you knew in the end, they were regular season heroes. They weren't going to matter once April came around. And so I think that's the big impact here. To your point about trades and everything else, yeah, rumored trades and what didn't happen. Right, the Ben Simmons story was second to the Westbrook trade. Why didn't Ben Simmons get traded? And we talked about it at the outset. Why didn't the Warriors go all in and find their next guy or make the trade for Simmons? That ends up dwarfing everything in terms of storylines. And it takes nothing away from Cunningham. Takes nothing away from the Terrence Clark moment that if you didn't at least get a little bit dusty, you have no soul. But big moments like that, still huge, and it was still a great event. But, yeah, I'm always trying to prop it up, man. Look, it's not going to be the Major League Baseball where it's just goals on the bottom scroll. It's not going to be the NFL, but I'm always trying to make it bigger, faster, and stronger.
I'll say this, and I'll compare it to the NFL. One of the things that we've seen in the NFL, especially specifically when it comes to quarterbacks, are teams – trying to take some college concepts for their young quarterbacks and bringing them to the NFL. When we want to talk about names in college basketball that we know and, I don't know this guy, I don't know that guy, we all knew Luka Garza. We knew Luka Garza, and we knew what he did at Iowa, and we knew what he did in college basketball. It's one of the bigger names in college basketball. To have him not fit into today's NBA and go to this 52nd pick overall in the second round to the Pistons. Like, that's a storyline in the NFL, Mike, that we would be following. That's a guy that's falling in the draft like a quarterback would be. But last night, it's just kind of an afterthought. And then you talk about how the college game connects to the NBA. In football, they're mending. And it doesn't seem like that's the case when it comes to basketball. It doesn't seem like the NBA and college basketball are coming together, and I think that's another problem.
One last thing,
okay,
Dan.
Go ahead.
And I got to give you the note from Ralph, because he goes, remember this year's draft? He goes, Rodgers. I go, yeah, Rodgers and Wilson overshadowed what was a pretty good NFL draft as well. So it leached into the other sports this year.
He's Mike Harmon. I'm Dan Beyer. This is the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Coming up next, your fantasy dilemmas have finally been answered. That's here on Fox Sports Radio.